And we are live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchell, live from New York. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm good.
All right. We're going to jump right into the news of the week. But as usual, you can ask us questions in the live comments on YouTube, and we're going to get to it toward the end of the show. Let's start with literally the biggest news of the week for us was the Cybertruck comments from Cindy Monroe, sorry.
Yeah,
about the production of the Cybertruck, of the Tesla Cybertruck. So Monroe, if you don't know him, is a sort of a manufacturing expert, especially lean manufacturing expert in the auto industry. And in the last two years, he's been associated with Tesla a lot due to his breakdown of the Model 3. And he has kind of a strange reputation in the Tesla community, I feel like, because at first everyone hated him in the Tesla community because he had like extremely negative comments about Tesla. And that was after his first breakdown of the Model 3. And then he started to soften up his comments as time grew by. And he was trying to sell his report from the breakdown of Model 3. And he was selling that, I want to say, like in tens of thousands of dollars. He was saying that
maybe
report.
Maybe even more, hundreds of thousands, I thought.
Hundreds of thousands? That sounds insane to me, but you might be right.
I mean, so basically, it's for manufacturers that don't want to buy a thing and you know,
don't want to do the breakdown themselves. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he was trying to stay in the news, basically, to sell that report. So I felt we didn't report too much on him at first because we felt like he was really like clickbaiting people into promoting his report. But in the Tesla community, they started to like him a lot because at the end, what he found out was attracting the most people. It was telling like how great the car was based on his breakdown. So that was a smart move from him. I don't know how to take his comment, how seriously I need to take his comment. But now he's commenting on the Tesla Cybertruck, a truck that he has never seen because he wasn't at the event, and that's the only time Tesla showed the car. But he made some comments based on what Tesla revealed about the truck itself and how it could be manufactured. So at first I didn't put too much importance on those comments, but then Elon apparently watched those comments because it was in the video on Autoline podcast, and Elon said that he agreed with Monroe's comments. So if he agreed with them, so I mean it probably was some good insight based on what he saw. And what he's saying basically in short is that he sees a good potential for greatly reducing the cost of the capital expenditure to bring the vehicle to production due to the fact that they are building it on an exoskeleton and combining the actual platform with the body of the car. So there's like no stamping of body panels. Everything is part of the structural integrity of the car. And also, since it's stainless steel, it's not going to be painted. Though apparently they're going to be able to make different colors, but they have to treat the stainless steel differently for different colors, I guess, is the process.
Yeah, I think it's like anodized aluminum, like those old iPods where you can kind of treat the finish with a...
you cook them, basically, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that process apparently could be a lot cheaper to do if it's done in scale than a paint shop, which of course a paint shop is not only expensive to make, but also it's hard to do right. Like, you know, how many times we've heard, especially in Tesla's early days, that the paint, there was a lot of paint issues. So you save that right away. So he threw out some numbers out there, but like I'm not exactly sure like how to trust his numbers. Like they seem like kind of like up in the air. He talked about like to deployed capacity to produce 50,000 cars a year for the F-150 at Ford, he estimated that to be about $200 million of investment to get to that capacity, and he set a number like $30 million for the Tesla Cybertruck, which is of course almost an order of magnitude better, which sounds a lot to me. Like I'd be surprised if that's the case, but I can definitely see be some great improvement being made to what we just mentioned. I just don't, like, 30 million sounds a little, like, very low. And of course, 50,000 truck is not what Tesla is aiming for. I mean, I don't know. They didn't release any actual numbers, but, I could see Tesla at least early on planning for 200,000 capacity. But yeah, it's encouraging, really, but I don't think Tesla is putting too much effort right now into the manufacturing of the Cybertruck. I'm sure they have a team working on it because they're going to literally have to create new machines to build that thing. But the focus right now is obviously on the Model Y. I see someone just asked about that. Model Y production starting in Q1, not Q4. Jonathan Bratt said that. Yeah, there's been rumors about that. Like, I'm working on an article on that right now, but it's not confirmed just yet. It's just rumors. We know that production should start relatively soon if Tesla wants to reach volume by mid years. But the problem here is they could start with very low production, with very low volume, and it could be just for employees at first. And so it's really not clear. We have Mike here, the host of the Daily Electric Podcast, in the comments. What I find interesting, there's one rumor about the start of Model Y production that involves Tesla Canada starting to apparently reach out some people to arrange deliveries as soon as next month. Now, I wasn't able to confirm that, so it's still very much a rumor. But it would be interesting, especially in Quebec, where we have a big incentive for electric vehicles here, but it is changing as soon as April, where they're going to reduce the limit on the purchase price of the car to get the $8,000 incentive, which is a pretty big incentive. And the Model Y would fall on over that limit as soon as April. So Tesla basically has only a few months now to deliver Model Y in Quebec for buyers to get access to that incentive. So that's significant because the Model Y, Quebec would be a big market for the Model Y with that $8,000 incentive. So maybe Tesla's going to try to focus some of the early production there. That would be appreciated, I'm sure, by people in Quebec. And Tesla tried to do the same thing with other markets in the past. I mean, they just did it with the Model 3 in the Netherlands, like last quarter, where they focused a lot of production there. So it would make sense that Tesla do it again do it for the Model Y. It's when they start production instead of later on, which is a stranger situation. But since the first market would be the U.S. and the U.S. doesn't have the federal tax incentive anymore, there's no rush really to bring the vehicle to market there in terms of the incentive for the buyers. It would make sense. So it's something to keep an eye on, really. All right, next news. Elon made a quick comment on the Maxwell acquisition. He did that on the Third Road Tesla podcast that he appeared on a few weeks ago, apparently, but they are sort of gradually releasing the interview. It was an interesting podcast to a degree. I mean, for the big Elon fan, Tesla fan, I don't think there was that much new in it, but still some interesting conversation there. One of the pieces of information that was new, though kind of vague, Elon said that it's kind of a big deal regarding the Maxwell acquisition. Maxwell has a bunch of technology that, if they are applied in the right way, I think can have a very big impact. So he didn't elaborate too much on that. He just said that the dry electrode technology that we reported on before is one of those technologies. Yeah, and of course, he said that more are going to be released during the battery investor and the battery and powertrain investor day, which he now says that's going to be a few months away. So it's maybe not in Q1 like we first expected last year. He also made some comment about the approach of other automakers regarding batteries. And he said that most other car companies want to outsource battery technology. There's the battery module and cell. They are all outsourcing the cell, but some are even outsourcing the modules in the pack. They are not thinking about the fundamental chemistry of improvements. That's kind of true, but not entirely true. I think a lot of automakers have like significant research group looking at everything down to the cell and to the chemistry of the cells. I agree that Tesla has the more wide-ranging approach here, and they had one for the longest time. Like, they've been researching battery cells for probably longer than any other automakers, seriously at least. But I don't think it's true to say that they're all like not looking at the chemistry. I think a lot of automakers are looking at the chemistry, and they are working with other manufacturers. Maybe not to the degree that Tesla is working with Panasonic, but close to it, I'd say. Where Tesla would really have a big, distance itself with any of the other automakers is if they would start making their own battery cells, which of course has been almost confirmed for the past year, but we're waiting for the Battery Investor Day to have the actual confirmation of it. Yeah, speaking of Elon being on the podcast, we should have Elon on the podcast set. We should try to make that happen. Elon on the Electric Podcast. Of course, we would be probably all live at one place, which would fix those technical issue that we have with StreamYard, which used to work super well for the last few weeks. It was working well, and now it's not working at all for some reason. If the listeners tweet at Elon, he should be on the Electric Podcast. We'd do a more in-depth technical maybe interview about Tesla, because that, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about the interview he did on Third Row Podcast, but it was more about like the background, which I feel like it's something that he commented on a lot before. Like, I'm more looking ahead into the future. Maybe the second part of their interview is more about that, which would be nice. Donald Trump made a rare comment about Elon and Tesla, saying that Elon is a genius. But what caught our attention more is he talked about Tesla building a very big plant in the U.S. So we looked a bit about what he was talking about here, like making sure, like, is this news? Because he said that he just talked to Elon recently. So did Elon said something to him that we don't know about? What is he talking about? So my first impression of it is like, it's probably nothing. I mean, I know some people like, he's very polarizing, Donald Trump. Some people love him, some people hate him. I don't have any strong feeling about him. But what I do know is that sometimes he says things that aren't true, for sure. And I mean, just in the same comments that he did just about Elon, he also said something about like, he talked about Thomas Edison in the present tense, and we should protect him or something. And like, hey, a bit too late about protecting Thomas Edison. But anyway, so I wouldn't take his comment too seriously. However, Elon did talk about opening another big plant in the U.S. He talked about he specifically talked about the tri-state area as a good place for a second Tesla factory in the U.S. He talked about the Fremont factory, of course, reaching in capacity now that the Model Y is being produced there. You cannot have any other vehicle program, I think, in Fremont. So people have been talking, where is the Tesla Roadster going to be built? Where is the Tesla Semi going to be built? Now, where is the Tesla Cybertruck going to be built? So it's either like they make it work at Gigafactory 1 in Nevada, or they find someplace else. And most likely it's going to be in the U.S. because especially the Cybertruck and the Tesla Semi, the market first is going to definitely be in the U.S. So yeah, it's definitely a possibility. But at the same time, Trump might have been talking about the Gigafactory 1 that's being built, that is a giant factory or something. So he might have been talking about that. Or he also briefly mentioned SpaceX during the whole thing too. So maybe he was talking about SpaceX building a big factory, which also the case for the Starship that they're building. That's going to require also technically a giant factory. So it's a giant product. Let's move on to the next news. Which is a reduced price for the Tesla Solar. I mean, it's not actually reduced pricing for the end buyer here, because in the U.S., of course, the federal tax rate went down this month from 30% to 26%. But it looks like Tesla is trying to compensate with its own price reduction on the actual cost of the system before the federal incentive. And for example, the biggest option, which is a 15.2 kilowatt home solar option, went from $39,000 to $37,500, which is a good drop from Tesla's perspective. Like, it's a decent reduction in price, but at the end of the day, for the customer after incentive, it's actually a little bit more expensive, $27,750 versus before $27,365. But still pretty close. I mean, they are keeping the price relatively the same for their system despite the drop. So the drop is now that it started. I mean, the federal incentive was at 30% for years. I don't know how long, but it was for a long time. Now the drop is going to be consistent. So I feel like that's going to prop up the industry this year to like try to speed up installation, because I mean, at least it's a fairer system than it is for EVs, where it's by automakers and everything. And it's stopped at 200,000. Now it's a time requirement. Like this year, now it's 26%. It's going to go down next and so on. At the same time as reducing the price, they also increased the reward for the referral program on it. It was $100. Now it's 250. And it's the same for the referrer and the buyer. So the buyer gets 250 off his system, and the referrer now gets $250 for the referral. And it's in Tesla credit, so you can like use it on Tesla product. I don't think you can use it on a car, though. I think you can use it on like on other things except a car. You can buy a car for some reason. At least it was the case. I don't know if they changed that. So if you do want to test the solar system, again, that's not the solar roof. It's just for the solar panels. You can use our codes. Mine is Frederick 5610, and Seth, if he knows it by heart, could say it now, but I wouldn't hear it.
Seth 8185.
So yeah, I mean, Tesla has the goal to increase the installation of solar for a while now. They did last year. It was one of the goals for the end of the year for Elon. We were kind of curious where they are at. The quarter before that, which was Q3 2019, was the first quarter where Tesla increased production quarter to quarter, increased deployment of solar quarter to quarter since the acquisition of SolarCity. They've been just going down since the acquisition. Now they had a little bump up. But they are nowhere near where they were in terms of installation every quarter before the acquisition. So we're kind of curious to see what it is like in Q4, especially ahead of the first drop in the federal tax incentive. So it would be interesting to see in the earnings next week at and solar installation. But I think what they're going to focus on is not necessarily the deployment last quarter, but the rate of deployment toward the end of the year, because that's what Elon was looking to increase the rate of deployment, which tells you like if they can maintain that through Q1, and then that gives you exactly what they're going to deploy going forward. Excuse me, I have something in mind. Trouble something. The claims on unintended acceleration for Tesla. So we talked about that last week when it just came out, and came out just before the podcast or something. That NHTSA is looking into a petition that was started about 127 claims of unintended acceleration in Tesla. And Tesla this week, they responded to the petition and the scrutiny that they invited from NHTSA. And there's a few different points, and if you read the blog post, we posted it on Electrek. First off, they claim that it's a short start of the petition, and they're right about that. The guy, Brian Spark, admitted that he's currently short Tesla, but he said he was also long Tesla at one point, and his position changed. Now he's short Tesla. At the end of the day, I don't know if that's that big of a deal. All it says that the guy that started the petition, I clearly had other motive than just like the safety of the public. He also like wants to bring negative attention to Tesla. But at the end of the day, the complaints that he gathered were seems to be real complaints from customers. So that's the important part here. That's what NHTSA is looking into. Now, Tesla also defended the fact that there is no unintended acceleration on Tesla vehicle, which, I mean, that's literally the name of the post. I think there is no unintended acceleration in Tesla vehicle. That's the name of the blog post. I have some issues with that itself, because like I reported in the first post, I don't think there's any defect on Tesla vehicle that leads to unintended acceleration sort of the perception is that the car accelerate by themselves, and I don't think that's the case at all. But that doesn't mean that it's not an intended acceleration at all. The 127 customer that were at accident, I do believe then that they didn't intend to accelerate. They didn't want to crash their car. They unintentionally accelerated due to what we call a pedal misplacement, using the wrong pedal, which is not exactly rare. And with a Tesla vehicle like Tesla's, which are, of course, a lot quicker off the start, it's less forgiving to have to press the wrong pedal. I mean, the best example is that you look at where those incidents happen, and it's mostly in parking lot where people are switching from the accelerator pedal to the brakes and so forth. They're like pulling forward, pulling backward, doing a several point parking or something like that. That's when those things happen. So it always points to pedal misplacement. But I think Tesla sort of like went at it the wrong way. Like, yes, and then they explain how they're trying to prevent that, which is fair, which is a good thing. But I feel like they should be more open about the fact that, yeah, pedal misplacement happens, and we're trying to limit that. But starting off the post by saying there's no unintended acceleration, I don't think that was the right thing, because there clearly are some unintended acceleration. They're just not caused by Tesla vehicle, but by some driver errors. And then some driver errors sometimes can happen due to other reason that Tesla could prevent, like, for example, some cars that were accused of having unintended acceleration, they found out that it was the floor mats that were sticking on the back of the pedal. So people would mistakenly press the wrong pedal, but they would, instead of letting go, they would the pedal would stay stuck, and then that's when the accident happened and things like that. So it's still important to listen to the customers on that front and making sure that there's not something that they're not seeing. Sorry. But in the case, I don't think that's happening. But it was interesting for Tesla to respond to that. So they did release their blog post this week about that. Next, that was a good news this week. Michigan, Tesla is now, well, at least they will be allowed to sell directly in Michigan as soon as the dismissal of their lawsuit against the state of Michigan is approved. So they came to an agreement with the state of Michigan against which Tesla has been embroiled in some kind of legal situation for the last 3 years, 4 years, not really, because they haven't been allowed to not only sell directly to customer in the state, which happened in other state for Tesla before, but in Michigan, they didn't even allow them to service their car with service center there, which I think that was like mean-spirited, really, like, but because Tesla has thousands of owners in Michigan. And because it's not that big of a state, it's easy to go to another state and buy a car. But then servicing it is not as fun if you have to drive 100 miles to a service center. So we reported on that this week. The local media said that, they reached an agreement with the state to settle a lawsuit. But then yesterday we got the actual joint motion for dismissal. So what is happening really is that the lawsuit is being dismissed and they are both jointly filing a motion to dismiss it, both, I mean, the state and Tesla. And in that motion, they started clarifying what will make Tesla able to sell and service their car in the state. And what that is actually some clarification of loopholes. It's actually things that a lot of readers suggested a bunch of times before, but it was never clear that Tesla could actually exploit the loopholes. Now the dismissal makes it clear, makes it into the official court records that Tesla can use those loopholes. For example, when it comes to servicing, Tesla will not be allowed to directly service the owners in Michigan, but they will be allowed if it's through a subsidiary. So Tesla is going to have to start a Tesla service subsidiary and own service center through that subsidiary, and through that they're going to be able to service cars. So it's clearly like just an official loophole. Similarly, for the delivery and sales of cars, Tesla can sell and deliver cars in the state, but the title of the car have to be from somewhere else than Michigan, so either another state or Canada, and bring the car into the state from that other region where the title is already made, and then transfer the title to the customer there. But Tesla is allowed to help the customer transfer the title and everything, so it shouldn't have that big of an impact on the customer experience. It's just going to be more paperwork for Tesla, basically. Which, I mean, I don't know if Seth, you want to comment on that, but it's kind of a weird situation. Like the state has to put into writing, here is how you can go around our laws that are kind of stupid so that like we don't have to change them and piss off all our contributors that are in the auto industry and the dealer car industry. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, it's kind of bull. It's just so sad that Detroit or Michigan is in such a bad place. And frankly, like it's kind of crappy that the other automakers are being such hard to work with on this. Like GM in particular seems to be going after Tesla in a bunch of states. Back to you.
Back to me. All right. I'm sure what you said was very insightful and people appreciate it, but I couldn't hear it. Next news, GM Cruise unveiled a new car this week. All right. So GM brought me up to San Francisco on Tuesday to check that out. And it was the Hunt V-Link, really. At first, they didn't even tell us what it was. I was excited. I thought I was going to ride in their latest generation self-driving car and get to see where GM Cruise is at in terms of self-driving, which I was kind of excited about. Instead, they unveil a self-driving electric car made for ride sharing. All right, what does that mean? It's called the Cruise Origin, by the way. They didn't reveal any spec about the car. I got excited for a second because they said, oh, it's built on a new GM electric platform, which we've been waiting for a while. Like GM is at the Bolt EV, and now they were talking about a new generation platform that was going to support new electric cars. And they confirmed that this is the first vehicle that used this platform, or they didn't want to release any spec for it. So we're going to have to wait a few weeks for that, apparently. So not much on that front. Then, of course, it's appealing. We're talking about non-electric, fully self-driving car that's going to be used on a ride-sharing system. Cruise is going to have like a Uber-like application, and those are going to be the cars that are going to power it. And we've talked about that forever. That's probably the future of transportation for most people. I still think that people are going to own some people are going to own cars, but it's like this model is likely going to be the cheapest model per mile for a lot of people. At the event, Cruise talked about like $5,000 cheaper than for the average car owner if you switch from owning a car to having a Cruise account. But that only works if you figure out self-driving. And they didn't claim to have figured out just yet. They just unveiled the car. It was a hardware unveiling when we're talking about mostly a software problem, like which is having a self-driving vehicle. But they say they're close to it, and they say that by the time they can bring this thing to production, which they didn't release a production timeline, they said they're going to be able to make it work. So there's not much really to say about it other than, all right, it's cool if they make the self-driving work, but for now, it's not working. So I told them, like, show me a demo, and I'm going to be much more excited about it, like, if you can actually make it work. But look, the other thing, like, with Cruise, too, is that Cruise is geofence. Right now, they are working in San Francisco. They are mapping San Francisco. They were trying to make it work in San Francisco, which is kind of a tough city to navigate to start with. So that's good on that front, meaning that it could be easier. Like if you go to Las Vegas, for example, which is pretty easy, like flat city to navigate around. But it still means that you need to adapt your system to every different environment. It's not like Tesla's approach, which is we just build a driver that's able to be released anywhere and drive anywhere. Though they haven't proven that either, so everything is up for grab right now. Mercedes-Benz and the EQS unveiling, sort of. I mean, they already unveiled the concept of it last year. Now they display the concept in LA with a pre-production prototype of the car, which is of course going to be their sedan EQ all-electric car. They have the EQC, which is the SUV. The EQS is going to be the sedan. And I mean, you look. We posted a gallery basically of all the pictures of it. See sort of the evolution between the concept version and the new pre-production version, which is obviously toned down versus the concept, which was looking extremely futuristic and everything. But looks pretty good. looks like it's going to be like an S-class competitor, Model S competitor, of course, though we don't have much of the spec just yet. They only shared, again, the specs from the concept version, which is never exactly the same as the production version. So not really worth getting into it, really, like talking about 700 kilometers of range. But like, what does that mean, really? We don't know until we have the production spec. Now, that's what's coming next year. What's already here this year is the, well, not in the US though, but the EQC is being sold in Europe right now, being delivered in Europe. Was a report that came out of Germany earlier this week about Mercedes cutting in half their production target for the SUV because of a battery shortage, specifically about the battery cell shortage from LG Chem, which is something we heard about before, something like Audi also having some problem with the batteries supply. Now, Mercedes is apparently having similar, talking about reducing to $25,000, 25,000 units. No, excuse me. 60,000 units to 30,000 units this year, the report said. And they said that they were originally aiming to make 25,000 units last year, and they only ended up making 7,000. And honestly, I don't know where their 7,000 units went, because the delivery numbers are not anywhere that in markets in Europe. So not even sure where those 7,000 went. Then Daimler sort of like denied the report, but not completely denied it. They said, no, we're actually aiming for 50,000 cars this year. They didn't comment on battery shortage or anything like that. However, a Daimler official, the man in charge of the work council there, which is, of course, like their sort of the unions that they have there, but they have like head of unions per automakers too. So the guy in charge of the Mercedes-Benz worker council, which is, his name is Michael Brecht, he said that one of the reasons why the company is struggling to meet demand right now to achieve production really is that Tesla brought Grumman, which of course that was like 3 years ago, not two years ago, that Tesla brought Grumman Engineering, and they say that Grumman Engineering was working with Mercedes-Benz to build a battery manufacturing production. And since Tesla forced Grumman to hand their contracts with other automakers in order to focus on Model 3 production, that affected Mercedes-Benz plan, and they are behind their battery production. So that's an interesting comment. I mean, I do believe him. The guy is, of course, like very knowledgeable, since like he works at Daimler and he is in the head of the workers' council. But it sort of contradicts the other report that came out earlier this week. The other report was talking about LG Chem battery cell supply. And of course, here we're not talking about Grumman working with Mercedes to build battery cell. We're talking about them making battery pack, battery module production lines here, which is, of course, what Mercedes does when it comes to battery. They don't do battery cell. And I don't think they plan to before that either. Their subsidiary, Acumotive, they are battery module and battery pack manufacturer. And that's who Grumman was working with, really. But it makes sense. It makes sense that Tesla handing the contract with Grumman, and Grumman probably making, like, from what we heard, from what Grumman was doing with Tesla, Grumman was basically building entire battery module and pack production lines for Tesla. So they were likely doing the same for Mercedes, and now they like not doing that anymore. So like Daimler has to find another manufacturer or build them themselves. And you know, they don't turn on the 25 cents there. It takes a while. It's like a big ship to turn around when they change strategy and everything. So be interesting. Katie Wood from ARK Invest had an interesting comment on it. She compared Tesla's acquisition of Grumman to Amazon's acquisition of Kiva Robotics. And for those who don't know, Kiva Robotics are the company that make the robots that are in the Amazon's warehouses, where they do all the self-driving around the warehouses and place all the different products everywhere to make it easier for people to grab them and ship orders quickly. So that was kind of the company that automated Amazon's core business, which is, of course, logistics, and made it more efficient. And Tesla, Grumman is doing the same for Tesla's core business, which is apparently manufacturing. That's what Elon has been saying for a while now, that Tesla is becoming a manufacturing company, and that's the core business. And the manufacturing is the product itself, that's just creating other products. So I thought that was an interesting comment from Wood here, worth sharing. Let me give me one of those if you want to kick out in set or something like that.
Yeah.
You can. All right. Subaru and Toyota making an all-electric SUV. Isn't that an exciting idea? Of course, both Subaru and Toyota are not known for being very very exciting in the EV space. And that's not that exciting of news either, because they're talking about 2025 here doing that. They didn't release any spec or anything like that. And of course, the spec wouldn't be worth anything if you're talking about a car that's 5 years away anyway. Like, in 5 years, we have no idea what the specs on the EV going to look like, but I assume it's going to be a great improvement. They did release some kind of, I assume it's a Clio model or something like that. We posted a picture on Electric if you want to check it out. It looks cool, but it looks very concept-like, and I don't expect the actual car to be anything like that. I mean, Toyota, when we talked about Toyota, Subaru, I think, partly owned by Toyota now. I know that like they have like a lot of partnership with a lot of different companies, not even. But it's Subaru has talked about making EVs for a while. They had those patents for dual motor four-wheel drive, but they didn't really come out with anything, and we're not holding our breath for it either. And Toyota, of course, has been doing like weird things. Yeah, go ahead, Seth.
All right, so I have one comment on the design of this thing. Fred says it looks futuristic. I think it's going to be the last car that Subaru ever makes, because, man, it's just not, even the concept is ugly. And in 2025, everybody will have switched over to EVs. Tesla will have integrate, you know, have gone another 5 years into development at their crazy rapid pace. And then they've got the Aztec here. So I'm not holding out hope for Subaru.
Back to me. Well, that's pretty much it for the news this week that we want to discuss. I mean, I see a few. The comments just disappear on my stand. I think the StreamYard, we need to find an alternative, because it was working super well, but today, not working great at all. Can you see the comment on StreamYard, Seth, and bring them up on the screen, and I can read it when they are on the screen, because right now I cannot see them at all. Elon gives too much fake news. All right, we discussed that with Jonathan Brad about the Model Y coming. So that would be here by the end of 2020. No, that's you're going a little bit too fast for me now. What was the last one? Cybertruck will be here by the end of 2020. That's, I think, impossible. Straight up impossible. Not 2022. No. This one, I don't believe at all.
All right. So,
okay, weekend here. Let's, we apologize for that. That's all on our hand. Model 3 has been around for 3 years. Yeah, pretty much. And it started like a slow delivery in 2017. Hit or miss EPS for Q4 2019. What do you guys think? I haven't what's the actual consensus for the EPS? What's the Tesla EPS Q4 consensus? Let me see. I can see real quick, unless you guys can share it in the comments, but I can get it pretty quick. Last quarter, Q4 2019.
I'm surprised you don't have that on quick dial there, Fred.
All right, I'll have it quick. That's real quick, but for sure, they're going to be profitable for the quarter with that kind of increase in deliveries. Now, I mean, it depends on how high are the expectation in terms of a hit or a miss. But I would assume that Wall Street is being a bit conservative, and that they are likely going to beat the earnings, in my opinion.
We could have called each other on the phone.
It should be, isn't it? Yeah, you're right, Jonathan. For sure, the Model Y does fix the two biggest problems with the Model 3. That's why the Model Y is going to have so much greater appeal to people. The only problem, like in the U.S., is for the lack of federal tax credit is going to make it less competitive with other offering on the market, because it's becoming more crowded. But I think it's still going to do well, though. I'm guessing that Tesla will use the Maxwell batteries for some models and then the Panasonic ones for other models. That would be weird if they have that great of an improvement over the Panasonic batteries, though. Like, if we're talking about 1,000,000 miles versus 500 miles of longevity, that has a big impact on the long-term value of the car. So I would... And something similar happened when Tesla switched to the 2170 cells on the Model 3 and still using the 18650 on the Model S and S. So we saw what happened to the Model S and X cells when the Model 3 came aboard. So I don't think Tesla wants to repeat that, especially not with the Model 3. I mean, I'm sure the Model Y is going to affect the cells of the Model 3, but if to mitigate that, to have the same new cells on every model, I think would be a great improvement to Tesla. And if Tesla invests millions of dollars in the Model S and X refresh and still doesn't have the batteries, the new batteries on it, or if like they switch to 2170 and then now they have the new Maxwell cells or whatever, it would be a mess. I think Tesla needs to come up with a battery pack architecture that can be shared with between all cars and have all the new cells. I think that's going to be the best approach. Yeah, that happens. The value drops from all three for sure. The FSD enable have more value as future taxis. Yeah, that's what Elon's comment about. What did he say? Like accrued, like it has a. It's not a depreciating asset anymore. It's not the asset gain in value. But you need to prove it. It needs to work. We're not there yet. That's same. Well, we need to be fair here. Cruise hasn't proved it yet. Tesla hasn't proved it yet. So doesn't mean anything until you can at least prove self-driving. I've seen an accident from the short distance where a lady got scared at the crossing and pressed the gas pedal full in. Yep, that happens too. And that's what we call unintended acceleration, which can happen on a Tesla car too. It's still unintended. Oh, come back to the other, like what podcast they were talking about? Like we might need to check with them. Another Chris Preacher, that's with Ben Sullins. Yeah, I should probably get Ben a call and ask him. Like he's very knowledgeable on that stuff. I'll do that this week and ask him what you're using, because we might need the same. Congrats, Martin Fahlberg, on your Model Y order. You're putting in down when they announce deliveries. Okay, yeah. All right. That's fair. That's probably smart. Jonathan Brad saying that you have to wait 12 months for that when they start delivery. I don't think they're going to start deliveries in 12 months. I think they're going to stop delivery. Unless you're saying that you're going to wait 12 months from the time you order, if you order when they start deliveries, which that could be fair depending on where you are. Yeah. All right. So that's it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for your question. And we're going to be back same time next week, hopefully with a better audio situation.